Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight. I might levitate right through the heaven's gate. Rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae. Simple and plain like Kanye, I heard him say it's murder one when he murder tracks. I'm a dirt bag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags. My first rap, catch Roberta Flack. I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim thugging them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect, all I need's to check. Mike, check.
It's been a long 9 days, Grizz Nation, but we are back on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. Thank you so much for joining us. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening to the program, I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. As I said, it's been a while. We haven't had a new show since last Tuesday. That was our season preview. We've played 5 basketball games, the Memphis Grizzlies have, and it's been a mixed bag, to say the least. Some good, some not so good, some highs, some lows, some very interesting developments on the coaching staff in terms of scheme, in terms of minutes, in terms of Marc Gasol becoming a legitimate three-point threat, apparently. It's been nuts these past 9 days. We're going to try to get a little bit deeper into it on this all-new episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Thank you so much for joining us. Ways to get in touch with the program. You can follow us on Twitter at GBB Live. You can see updates on guests. You can be a part of the question of the day. When we do Fan Essentials giveaways, you'll be one of the first to know about them. So make sure that you are following us on Twitter at GBB Live. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Mullinax, MULLINAX. And you can follow our great blog, SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues, at SBN Grizzlies. Going to be a great show for you. Again, I'm excited about our guest list every week. It seems like we continue to put out very fortunate to have some folks that are willing to come on the program. In our first segment, it'll be John Roser, the assistant program director over at 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis. He's been on the show several times in the past. Roser's always a great conversation about these Grizzlies. He's also the post-game analyst for the Grizzlies radio network. And we're going to talk to him about this Marc Gasol, Mark Kyle Korver, Gasol, Mark Klay Thompson, Gasol, all of those different nicknames that we can give him. We'll talk to him about that. We will talk to him about minutes management. That's been a hot topic. I had a chance to go on Memphis radio this week and talk about that a little bit. So that'll be a good thing to get Roser's take on. And we'll also preview the Clippers and Grizzlies, obviously the big game for Friday night, heading into the weekend, a big weekend for the Grizzlies in terms of potential playoff opponents, guys that they have played in the past in the playoffs. They have the Clippers on Friday and the Blazers on Sunday. We will talk about the Clippers with Roser. Then in the second segment, I'm excited the debut of Keith Parrish, one of the hosts of the Fast Break Breakfast podcast over on the Step Back. He does a tremendous job on that show. I had a chance over the summer to be a guest on their podcast. Told them that I would return the favor. This is me finally returning the favor. I'm excited to have Keith on the program. He was a little bit more pessimistic about the Grizzlies going into the season than I was. I'm interested to see if he's still pessimistic 5 games in, granted a small sample size. We'll talk about Zach Randolph, who has been a monster offensively. Defensively, he's not has been as much as a monster. We'll talk to him about Zebo. We'll talk about the young bigs in Jarrell Martin and Deontay Davis. And in that last segment, we will preview the next 3 games. The Grizzlies only play 3 games between this recording Thursday night on November 3rd and then November 10th. The next time we'll be on the show or on these airways, they only play 3 games. So it'll be nice to see them get a little bit of a breather coming up next week. So Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast is going to be on the podcast later on. But first, as I said, excited to have him back. Assistant program director over at 92.9 FM ESPN in Memphis. He also is a post-game analyst or the post-game analyst for the Memphis Grizzlies radio network. He is John Roser. Mr. Roser, how are you doing?
What's up, Joe? Doing well, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, it's been an interesting opportunity to see where these Grizzlies are. Obviously, five games into the season, they look a lot different, Roser. I guess I should have expected that maybe a little bit more, and I knew there would be some changes, but they are a lot different than they have been in the any point in the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, they're shooting threes, and they're shooting a lot of threes, and it's aside from last night's game, in the wins, they've been making a lot of threes. You know, they made, 15 against Washington, and they made 10 or more than 10 against Minnesota on opening night. So that's been the big thing. They're shooting, they're taking and making a lot more threes than they normally have.
They have 10 players on their roster who have made at least one three. And Troy Daniels is the worst three-point shooter on the team at 0 made out of 7 attempts. If you had told me that going 5 games in, I would have called you a liar. That's crazy.
Having 10 guys that would be willing to take threes on this team in the past was trouble. Like finding 10 guys on the team that would actually be willing to take threes was a problem for the Grizzlies, and now it's not a problem at all. You got 10 guys who have made threes.
It's a welcome change, that's for sure. And that's one of the major takeaways so far, is that three-point shooting, the move to try to create more space, to try to create more offensive efficiency through that three-point shot. Outside of the three-point shooting, which is obviously a major change, what else can you take away from the Grizzlies 5 games in? Because we've seen a lot of changes, but at the same time, we still haven't seen Chandler Parsons on the floor. We still haven't seen Brandon Wright. There's still a lot to kind of be taken away down the road. But these first 5 games, what are some initial thoughts of yours?
Zach Randolph off the bench. Now, he did not have a good – he had a double-double last night, but he did not have a great shooting. He was like 5 of 18 from the field. I think like him, Gasol, and Conley were like – I mean, it was bad, their combined percentage. Now, Conley wasn't as bad last night. He was 6 for 14. He got better as the game went on. But Gasol and Randolph last night were horrible combined from the field. It was – I mean, I don't remember what it was, like 13 for 36 or maybe even – maybe like – 11. I mean, it was something ridiculous what their numbers combined for. I would say Zach off the bench, but so far, other than that, Zach off the bench and that 6-man role playing against backups has benefited him big time. The bad part, Zach's defense, it looks like it has slipped even more, which we knew this day was coming. I mean, as he gets older and older and as the league transitions to the way it's transitioning to, which is more and more pace and space, stretch fours and things of that nature, you kind of knew that was it kind of had a it had a life on it that you knew it wouldn't last as long, or that would run out. I would say the other bad thing is, you know, well, we don't have everybody healthy yet. You know, Tony Allen just came back Tuesday night against Minnesota, but you got run out of the gym because you didn't play Conley and Gasol, so really you couldn't really take anything away from his 18 minutes. And you see Tony last night, and there are times, yeah, like Tony looked a little lost and struggled a little bit. He missed the layups, which you come to expect from Tony Allen. He giveth and taketh. But he also said after the game last night, I was in that locker room, and he said he's still trying to find himself. And everything, you know, he just got back, and even on Tuesday, his first game back, he wasn't playing with the full complement of players, and he's not going to be as long as Parsons and Wright and Brandon Wright aren't there. But you know, Conley and Gasol, he's played with those guys for years, and so he didn't have those guys out there. So it's kind of tough to take anything away from that without seeing him out there with those guys. But you know, like you said, he's still trying to find himself. I would say. Good things is the Grizzlies are taking threes. Like, they're taking more threes. They needed to transition to this a few years ago, and they didn't do it. You know, now I think seeing as how – I think the last two seasons have kind of opened their eyes, opened up Gasol's eyes and opened up Conley's eyes to we have to start playing this way and have to start transitioning towards this. And the move to get Chandler Parsons in the offseason was a step in that right direction. I'll also say other good things – well, JaMychal Green last night was awesome. And I'll say another good thing so far this season, probably the biggest good thing to me for the Grizzlies is James Ennis is a player. Like, James Ennis looks like he's a rotation player and has solidified himself as your backup three when Chandler Parsons gets back. And that will reduce Vince Carter's minutes. But at Vince's age, You know, he played 32 minutes last night and didn't score at all. Like, Vince doesn't need to be playing 25 to 30 minutes a night. He's 39 years old. That's not sustainable. You know, he hit the five threes against Washington. Like, that's not going to be sustainable. I'm not even saying five threes, but, like, I don't think Vince is going to go 2 for 5 from three every night if he's playing 25 minutes. I just don't know that there's enough left in the tank for him to be able to do that. So it's actually, I think, when Parsons comes back and Ennis moves to that bench, one, you get some scoring pop off that bench. You get some scoring pop off the bench. Ennis also has rebounded very well from that small forward spot. I think he had double digits. I don't have the box score on me from last night. I think it's in my house. But I think he had double-digit rebounds. I think he had 11 or 12 rebounds last night. So it's somewhere between 10 and 12. So he's also rebounded very well. That's kind of the biggest thing I've taken away so far is that James Ennis is a player, and you got him for another year too. And that's important too, because you've got him on a pretty cheap deal. And if he proves, I think he's like $3 million a year, and if he proves that he's definitely a rotation player on a solid team, because I expect, as long as, you know, the Grizzlies stay healthy, I expect them to make the playoffs. So, and the fact that James Ennis could be a quality rotation player on a playoff team, that would do nothing but help him in free agency. But, you know, you've got him for another year, so you don't have to worry about that. Other good things, I'd say Conley and Gasol look healthy. They totally look healthy, which I heard the rumors that Conley, we've all heard them, that if Mark would have been there last year and Mario would have been there and they wouldn't have been hurt and so banged up, that Conley probably would have played in the playoffs. But because Mark wasn't there, Rio got hurt and tore his Achilles, that, you know, it really just wasn't worth it at all. You knew you had no chance, especially when you saw that you drew San Antonio in the first round. But I would say my biggest takeaway as far as what's good is Gasol and Conley appear to be totally healthy. Gasol looks way better than I thought he would. Now, he didn't shoot the ball well last night, but he did hit the big three in overtime. But I would say James Ennis has definitely been a revelation. Like, I saw last year when he played for us, and I saw him some a couple years ago in the preseason with Miami. I was like, there's some talent there. Like, there's definitely some talent, but you don't know what that's going to turn into. Just about everybody in the NBA that's a 6'8" to 6'9" wing is athletic. So you don't know, you don't know what it's going to turn into, but I'd say Ennis looks fantastic.
James Ennis, his stat line from the game against the Pelicans, 5 for 8 shooting, 2 for 4 from 3-point land. He had 10 rebounds, 16 points, plus 25 in plus minus, plus 25.
Yeah, no, I tweeted that out. I tweeted that out last night. So James is, how many minutes did he play? It was like 38. No, I'm talking in regulation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was 32-37, 32 minutes and 37 seconds in regulation, and the score was 75-75 at the end of regulation. James Ennis in 32 minutes and 37 seconds was a plus 19 when he was on the court, which means in 15 minutes and 23 seconds that he wasn't on the court in regulation, the Grizzlies got outscored by 19 points. Like, that's insane to me.
Amazing.
That in a 75-75 game that somebody could be a plus 19. Like, that just seems outrageous.
He obviously is making a huge impact. And as you alluded to, also just kind of to build off of Vince Carter currently is third on the team in minutes with 132 minutes played in just 5 games.
Yeah.
Not ideal and certainly not sustainable. Something else that isn't sustainable, potentially, is Marc Gasol, the 39% three-point shooter. Right now, he is 7 for 18. He is shooting 39% from three. Now, obviously, he's worked on this aspect of his game, but, Roser, is this sustainable for Marc Gasol to be a 39% three-point shooter?
I don't see why not. I mean, you know, Mike Conley said after Sunday night's game, you know, like I said, here we go again. I mean, just people got to understand this. Like, I'm in the locker room after every game. So I hear what these guys say. I'm in there after every home game. And Mike said, you know, for years, when, you know, we do three-point shooting in practice, he's like, Mark's always been one of the best three-point shooters on the team. It's just their offensive philosophy didn't revolve or didn't have him – their offensive philosophy, their offensive system didn't have him taking threes. It had him operating more out of that high post area or high post extended, elbow extended area. And that's not the case anymore. The Coach Fizdale wants Mark taking threes, and I'll tell you what I like about this, and I'll go back to Ennis on this too, is that, you know, when you hear about the 3-point shot, like taking threes, what's the one spot on the court that they always bring up? You answer this to me, Joe. What is the one spot on the court they always bring up when it comes to taking threes and where you need to be a good 3-point shooter from?
I would say from the corner.
From the corner, exactly, because that's what JaMychal Green was doing last year. That's what JaMychal Green's done a lot of this, you know, take that corner three when it's there. Gasol takes the majority of his, the top of the key. And James Ennis,
right.
What I've noticed about Ennis, Ennis isn't afraid to take him from the wings. Ennis will take him from the left and right wings. That seems to be, at least from my eyes, I haven't looked at a shot chart or anything, but it seems like most of Ennis's threes that he's taken has come from the wings. I don't know if the numbers would prove that, if the data would prove that out, but it's what my eyes see is that, or at least the ones he makes, seem to come from the wings. So I like the fact that they got guys taking threes from all over the court. It's not just watch out for the corner three, you know? You got guys who can take him from the top of the key, and Gasol. Conley can take him from anywhere. Conley will take him from anywhere on the court, whether it's the wing, the top of the key, or the corners, or that area between the corners and the wing. Conley will take him from anywhere. So I like the fact that they have that. Vince will do it too. Vince will take it from anywhere. So I like the fact that they are taking him from every spot, from every different spot on the floor. I don't see why Gasol can't sustain it. I don't know if it'll be 39%, but I mean, I expect Marc Gasol to be, I expect by the end of the year we'll look up and Marc Gasol will be shooting 36-37% or better from three. He's a good shooter. Like he is. Like he's all he's doing is just taking like one step back or two steps back. That's all he's doing, really. I mean, he'd shoot that 21-foot jump shot all the time, and it's like all he's doing is taking a step back and shooting it. Like, and he's 7 feet tall, so it's not like it's tough for him to get the shot up and get it to the rim at all. So I absolutely think it can be sustainable, and I'll tell you, they're going to need it to be sustainable, especially if you don't know about Parsons' health. And I know when Parsons comes back, he's going to be limited as far as minutes go. Because he's, you know, clearly you invested $94 million in him and you don't want to just rush him back and everything. And even when you do get him out there first, you don't want to run him out there for 31 minutes or 32 minutes a night. I think it absolutely could be sustainable. I don't see why not. Marc Gasol's, we've seen Marc Gasol be a great shooter for this team for a long time. I don't see why he can't be a great shooter taking a step back, just taking one step back and shooting from there. And here's the thing, like, now that, you know, he worked on it all summer because Coach Fizdale went to visit him in Barcelona and ran it all through him and said, I want you working on this. I want you working on this. I'm going to have you taking these, and I want you taking at least four a game. So clearly I think he was working on it all summer throughout the rehab process. And when he was able to get back on the court and start playing, I think he started practicing and taking a lot of threes. And I think, you know, the more he takes, the better he's going to get, especially as he goes deeper into this contract.
We're chatting with John Roser of 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis. He's the assistant program director. He also is a post-game analyst for the Memphis Grizzlies radio network. Something that has been a constant topic of conversation the past 4 or 5 days, Roser, is the idea of minutes management. Coach Fizdale went through the one stretch of 4 games and 5 nights with the Grizzlies these past few days. He limited Conley and Mark in the first set of back-to-backs against the Knicks and the Wizards. Then in the second set against the Timberwolves and the Pelicans, he completely sat out Mark and Mike in the first game. This frustrated some fans, which was interesting to me because you're seeing them be conscious of the fact, like you said with Chandler Parsons, they've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in three people. They're going to try to make sure they stay healthy and make it through an entire season. But when it comes to minutes management, is there a right way to do it, or do you think it's still so early in the season that they shouldn't be managing minutes at all?
Oh, no, I think they should absolutely do it, and I applaud them for doing it Tuesday night. at Minnesota. Look, the only thing I think I get, it is frustrating too, because I listened to some of Hasseltine on the call the other night, and I could hear the frustration in him. Well, and the main frustration was the fact they turned it over 9 times in the first quarter. Like, I mean, it was just a disaster. They didn't get beat as badly as they did because they didn't have Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. Like, they made dumb mistakes in the first half of that game and totally killed themselves. They had 15 turnovers in the first half. You can't do that. Like, against anybody. Like, you just can't turn it over that much. And Fizdale said after that Minnesota game, he said he thought with Wade Baldwin, he was trying to go, you know, number 17 pick against the number 5 pick in the draft and trying to just beat him head-to-head. And you're not going to win doing that. Like, they didn't run their stuff. It was a lot of one-on-ones. And so, like, that's why they got beat as bad as they did. I think as far as the minutes thing goes, it is I think they're going to do it more throughout the season where they'll rest guys. It's a little bit tougher right now, especially to see it, because you didn't have your full – you didn't have Parsons. You didn't have Brandon Wright. That can help, you know. If you got to sit – Conley and Parsons one night, but you play if Parsons comes back. If you got it, and then you know, like after 10 or 12 games, you got to sit Conley and sit Parsons one night. All right, well, you got Marc Gasol, and you can just run stuff through him, you know, while he's on the court. Or if you got to sit Parsons and Gasol one night, well, you got Mike Conley who can run the offense. Or if you got to sit Conley and Gasol one night. Well, Parsons is also going to be kind of a point forward for this team too, and bring the ball up the court. Like, you got him; he can help run the offense a little bit when you got with some of those other guys out there. So I think that's why it looks a little tough. You know, it's a little tougher for people to handle right now. The other thing I'll say, they didn't do it at home. I heard Jeff Calkins talked about this on. He talked about this morning. Today's Thursday. So he talked about it yesterday morning. I forgot what day it was. I know, right? He talked about it. It's been a long week. He talked about it Wednesday that he's like, look, I hate doing this argument anyway, but it is true. Like, nobody in Minnesota paid to see Mike Conley and Marc Gasol play. Nobody did. Like, they're going to see the Timberwolves, you know. They're not paying to see Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. It's not like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant or LeBron James were showing up playing, you know, that Minnesota fans would pay to see play. Minnesota fans weren't paying to see Conley and Gasol. But in Memphis, those fans at the games are absolutely paying to see Conley and Gasol. That's who they want to see their team play. So I would take a little bit of an issue with it if they did it at home, but also at the same time, like, you've got to. So look, the Spurs do it, and the Spurs have this established culture, and it took them, you know, time to establish it, and that's what Coach Fizdale's trying to do. And so it's not going to happen overnight. It may take 2 years, 3 years to fully establish it. That, you know, with the Spurs, those bench guys know we. We'll play a certain way. This is what we do. This is how we play the Spurs way. And, you know, the thing is with the Spurs, like a lot of their guys that they're doing it with, like they're dealing with like guys who have been in the league a few years. Like with the Grizzlies, you're doing it with Andrew Harrison and Wade Baldwin and Deontay Davis. Like, you're doing it with rookies. Like, not only are they trying to learn your style, they're trying to learn the NBA game too. So it's going to be a little bit of a process. That's why I do think the Grizzlies may pull in a veteran point guard. I think they may bring one in. Baldwin was fantastic opening night against Minnesota, and he's been kind of since then. He has not been great since then, and Harrison hadn't been great either. So I actually think they may bring in a veteran point guard. But the minutes thing, it's also the staggering the minutes restriction is a little difficult for me because. I understand where Coach Fizdale comes from. Like, you know, Washington the other night, he's like, the game's slipping away. And he saw, like, we built a 15-point lead in the first half. And we were playing great when Gasol and Conley and everybody out there, you know. And it's like, this game's slipping away. We're down 8. Like, I got to put Gasol back out there. I got to, like, the hell with minutes. I got to win the game. Like, I want to win the game. And he puts it back out there. Boom, they go to overtime. Gasol and Conley score the last 22 points of the game, and they win the game. That's why I think it's going to be tough for the minutes restriction, because if you do play those guys, you see how much better the team looks with them out on the court. And it's going to be tough when things start getting tough. If you have played them, like, you know, 20 minutes each, when things start going bad, you've already seen how they look during that game with them out on the court together. It's going to be tough to not say, guys, go in the game, go win. Like, go win the game for us. Go win us this game. That's why I think the better thing is probably just sitting them. Just go ahead and sit them. Just rest them completely. And that way you can never say what if. Like, I just sat them. I sat them and they didn't play. They didn't have any kind of impact on this game at all.
There's something to be said for that competitive edge that a coach or a player has. And sometimes you have to step away as a coach.
They all have it.
Try to remove it. But it's really hard to do that, like you said, especially if you've already seen them play. You see the impact that they make. It's kind of like trying to just have, you know, one little piece of cake. I'm just going to take a half a piece of cake, or I'm just going to have half of a beer, or I'm just going to, you know, once you have a little bit, you want to have the rest of it. If you're going to play them, especially in a tight contest, you're going to want to finish it off here. Speaking of finishing off, we are wrapping up here with John Roser, the assistant program director over at 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis. He also is the postgame analyst for the Memphis Grizzlies radio network. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already do so, @John_Roser. Roser, we'll get you out of here on this. Our Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day today, we had over 135 people vote. Thanks to everyone who voted in our poll. Which Grizzlies rookie are you most excited about so far? I left Andrew Harrison out for reasons we'll probably discuss here in a moment. I had Wade Baldwin, Troy Williams, and Deontay Davis. Wade Baldwin was the overwhelming winner. 67% of Grizzlies fans are most excited about Wade Baldwin. I think I'm going to go Deontay Davis, even though he hasn't played a ton. His current offensive rating, defensive rating, again, he's only played 33 minutes, so this is obviously very small sample size. 98 defensive rating, 147 offensive rating. Deontay Davis and Wade Baldwin and Troy Williams have all definitely shown flashes, but who are you most excited about?
I'm going to also say Deontay Davis. I think the overwhelming majority was Wade Baldwin is because people probably turned off that Timberwolves game very early. You can turn that game off in the first quarter and a half. I mean, it was pretty much done. I'll say Deontay Davis because, that guy looks like he is very raw. Very raw. But he does have a little bit of touch around the basket. He can finish around the rim, but the most important thing is that with his shot blocking ability, again, he's very raw. My hope is he could be a serious, serious rim protector for the Grizzlies in about 2 years. In his third season in the league, I think he could be a serious rim protector. Also, he sat down and took a jump shot in that Minnesota game, and he missed it, but it didn't look bad. Like, his form didn't look bad. So if he could be down the line, like, in 2 years, like, Brandon Wright's contract's up after next season. So after next season, could Deontay Davis step in? So, you know, the 2018-19 season, could Deontay Davis step into that backup center role behind Mark Gasol? It'd be a serious rim protector for you. And also, because I didn't think his shot looked that bad, could he be a pick-and-pop guy? Clearly, with his athleticism and his length, he could be a pick-and-roll guy and just dash to the basket, kind of like a DeAndre Jordan. I don't know if it would be as good as DeAndre Jordan. I kind of thought a little Tristan Thompson when I saw him. I kind of thought he got a little Tristan Thompson in him. But can he be a serious rebounder, serious shot blocking threat, and a serious rim protector? That is massive. I mean, that is so huge if he could be that. Like that, his talent to me, I think just watching him, he's got more talent than Wade Baldwin does. I think he's got more talent than Baldwin. I think there's a ceiling to Baldwin. I think there's a ceiling on Baldwin. I don't know what Davis's ceiling is. I don't like, I could that guy, he's got the raw talent to be one of the best big men to be one of the best centers in the league. I'm not going to say because he's not Anthony Davis, Carl Anthony Towns, but he could be one of the best. I don't really consider Davis and Towns really centers either. They're more power forwards now. but I think he could be one of the best centers in the league. Now, and that may not be saying much because there aren't a ton of great centers in the league anymore. I mean, there really aren't. But I think he can be. I think the potential is there as long as he develops right, and he wants to develop right and works at it. I think Deontay Davis. I think the ceiling is very, very high for him.
I think one of the reasons he fell in the draft is that greenness, how raw he is. He's not ready to contribute to a good team when everybody's healthy right now consistently, but he shows those flashes. And I agree with you completely. As a rim protector, especially as Mark Gasol ages, especially as Chandler Parsons starts to make a transition from a wing to a stretch four power forward later on in his contract, he is going to be massively important to these Memphis Grizzlies.
Absolutely. I would bet you, I haven't seen practice. I would bet you they've already started Deontay Davis. They probably have him practicing threes a little bit. Like, hey, man, when you're just in the gym shooting around, like, and you're just taking shots from the outside, step out to that three-point line and take them from there.
Right. Yeah.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. He is one of those.
Did you see him take the jump shot the other night? Did you see that
good jump
shot?
It was fluid.
It didn't look bad. Yeah, he missed it, but you can tell when some people take a jump shot, you're like, oh, like, well, that just doesn't look like it's like Tony Roten.
Right.
Like something just doesn't look good. Like Tony Allen, even, you're like, it's not a good looking jump shot. But like, it didn't look bad. It didn't look awkward. It looked like, okay, like there's something there.
There's something there, and it's nice to be able to say that about some young players because the Grizzlies' draft future does not look too bright, so hopefully these young guys can come along. John Roser, thank you so much for joining us as always. You're a terrific guest for us, and we'll have you on again in the future. We really appreciate the time.
You got it, Joe. Take it easy, man.
Absolutely. Same to you, sir. There he goes, Mr. John Roser, the assistant program director over at 92.9 FM ESPN in Memphis. He is also the post-game analyst for the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you do not already do so, @John_Roser. Great guest. Love talking with Roser. We carry on here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Before we get to our next guest, I do want to give a special shout-out to our tremendous sponsor, FanEssentials.net. It needs to be, if it's not already, your number one source for Grizzlies gear in box form, because I love the fact that these folks organize the gear for you, because I don't have the fashion sense or the time to go through and pick and choose all the time. So you sign up for a subscription, you get to pick the size of the box, you get to pick how much you want to pay, how many months, they have various options, and they send it right to your door. No fuss, no muss, you make your choices, they hook you up with the greatest Grizzlies gear you can possibly get, and it all is shipped right to you. It's easy. I love their service, and I highly recommend that you sign up for FanEssentials.net, a great, great, great sponsor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. My next guest on the show is a great podcast host in and of himself. He is a co-host of the Fast Break Breakfast podcast over on the Step Back Network. He does a great job. I had a chance to be on their show over the summer. I had a great time. I love listening to their show, and I'm excited to have him on the show to return the favor in terms of being a guest. He is Keith Parrish. Keith, how's it going?
Great, Joe. Thanks for having me. Happy to be on Grizzly Bear Blues Live.
Grizzly Bear Blues Live. As Peter Edmiston says, the GBB bump, baby. You're about to experience it.
Man, I'm going to bring it on. Bring it on.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. And as I said, I really enjoyed being on your guys' show over the summer. And when we were talking, you and I kind of gave you a hard time on Twitter just now before. I brought you on. I was a bit more rosy about the Grizzlies' prospects than I probably should have been, especially considering how Parsons' knee has played out. So in the interest of full disclosure, I'm maybe a little bit closer to you at this point than I was when we last chatted. But you were also pretty pessimist in terms of Grizzlies' playoff hopes, in terms of being the under on that 43.5. I believe you had the Grizzlies at 42 wins. So one of the themes the last time we chatted was – you were kind of pessimistic. I was kind of optimistic. After five games, and again, fully acknowledging that we haven't seen Chandler Parsons yet. We haven't seen Brandon Wright. Tony Allen just recently came back. The Grizzlies, I believe their strength of schedule is in the bottom five of the NBA. So it's not like they're playing the best the league has to offer. Competition jumps up starting on Friday. How do you feel about them five games in? Are you feeling a little bit better? Are you feeling about the same? Where are you at in terms of how this team's season is going to go?
Well, it's all perspective from where we came from. Like, to answer the question, after five games, I feel great because they won three of them, and I consider that to be incredibly fortunate. That they could easily be 0-5. Like, they beat three bad teams in kind of borderline miraculous fashion a couple times. So in that way, I feel good about the fact they're 3-2. Going back to like the broader perspective of when we spoke, I think we had you on Fast Break Breakfast in July. And at that time, I felt like a lot of Grizzlies fans were really optimistic, and you were really optimistic about the team. And I was like, I don't see how these guys, we're not going to have them healthy. Like, the guys we're expecting aren't going to be healthy. And then the rest of the guys are totally unproven. And so after five games, like, I'm incredibly happy. Like, I heard Roser talking about James Ennis. Like, James Ennis was one of the big question marks. Like, is he going to be the guy? You know, he's been killing it. Like, so he has kind of carried over what he did for the last few games for the Pelicans last year. So he's brought that over. So that makes me feel better. I was very concerned about the rookies. I don't watch college basketball, but just the fact that Deontay Davis came in with, like, he fell in the draft and then he had the foot problems, the plantar fasciitis, that was a red flag to me. I watched Wade Baldwin in summer league and I'm like, this guy doesn't seem like he knows what to do on offense. And I still feel that way after watching him play. But he is dynamic enough on defense where I'm like, all right, he can contribute. So I think I'm not any more pessimistic or optimistic. I feel like this team, like, okay, they're kind of what I was worried they would be, but they've won some games and they're lucky, and I think they still can make the playoffs, you know, which is a big goal. 42 wins might do it. So I feel like other parts of Grizz Nation, maybe they're getting their eyes opened that things weren't as good as we thought they were. But, I don't often get predictions right, but this one's more like, I feel like, yeah, this is what I thought was going to happen. Like, this team is really sketchy right now as they're trying to figure out this new rotation and wait for, you know, Chandler Parsons to get back from injury.
And there's also aspects to it, as there usually are in sports, that, you know, both sides were kind of right, because part of my optimism was thinking that Marc Gasol was going to be fine. And as of this point, up to this point, knock on every piece of wood in the general vicinity, he's doing fantastic. He looks like the guy from 2 years ago. Now, obviously, he had a terrible shooting night against the Pelicans. But outside of that, he looks like the all,
bad.
He looks like the all-NBA center from 2 years ago with a three-point shot now. That's what he looks like. And that is massive for this team, if he is able to consistently do that. So the fact that Gasol and Conley are healthy, that was part of my optimism. But I was overly optimistic about Chandler Parsons. I thought that he'd be ready to go. All indications are this guy's not going to be able to play for another week or two. And even then, it's going to take a week or two for him to get acclimated. As Roser said earlier in the show, they'll certainly have him on a minutes restriction. It's not like they're going to throw him out there for 36 minutes a night from the jump. So it's likely a month until we really see what this guy's got in a Grizzlies uniform. And that's probably being, you know, optimistic even in that prediction. So the Chandler Parsons injury is concerning. But one of the positives, the silver lining in the dark cloud, is getting to see these rookies play. That's something that is new for Memphis fans. They're not used to seeing a starting lineup, as I tweeted out, against the Minnesota Timberwolves with an average age of 23. You're not used to seeing multiple rookies for these Grizzlies play extended periods of time. So while it might be frustrating with the style of play, which clearly was not ideal in several situations against the Timberwolves or the Pelicans, you're getting young guys that you're going to have to depend on an opportunity to play. And for me, that is something to be optimistic about, because it's November, they're getting meaningful minutes. Hopefully when their number is called, when they're really needed in March and April, they'll be able to rise to the challenge.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think I tweeted on opening night, because in the first quarter, like the first quarter of opening night, three rookies played. And I was like, this is incredible. Like this show's great promise or great hope, you know, like that we're actually, you know, throwing them to the wolves. We're letting them make mistakes. Like this is good. This is the thing we never seen before. It always had been like, why don't we let so-and-so play? Like, why doesn't Jordan Adams get in, or, you know, or why doesn't years ago, Tony Roten get in? Why doesn't whoever was on the end of the bench? And now it's like, all right, they're at least letting them play. And then if they're going to be resting guys like they did in at Minnesota game, you know, like you're depending on this, you're laying the foundation. Like it's so early in the season, you're laying the foundation, and then you're letting these guys get used to the ball, getting used to the pressure, getting used to, you know, like the team depending on them. And then you hope that pays off, that we can cash that out later in the year, you know, when things are serious and hopefully we have our full lineup that we're hoping for.
It's something to keep an eye on for sure when it comes to the young players. Cause like I said, you're going to need them at some point. When you invest as much money as they have in Gasol, Conley, and Parsons, you're going to need those younger guys that are on their rookie contracts to give something to you in terms of production. So you might as well figure out what you got having them at an early stage in the season. A guy that you know exactly what you've got in terms of the ability to score the basketball and get the ball off the glass for rebounds is Zach Randolph. Early sixth man of the year, nominee, favorite, however you want to put it, this guy is really taking to this role, and he's doing some good things on the offensive side of the court. Thankfully, sixth man of the year is not a defensive award because he is getting absolutely decimated, especially against the Washington Wizards. But in every game so far, there's been aspects and times where the pick and roll has just completely crushed Zach. And as Roser said in the first segment, it was going to happen, and you've seen it kind of progressing to that point as time has gone on. But Zach Randolph, obviously scoring the ball well, obviously being a good leader for this team, taking on this new role, at least in public eye, he might, you know, be a little bit salty about not being a starter behind the scenes. But when you watch Zach play through these first five games, are you more excited for the fact that he's scoring and playing well against these second unit bigs, or are you more worried about the fact that he's getting torched defensively?
Well, I guess I would say I'm happier that his offense is clicking. I feel like the defensive thing is he's being put in a situation where he has almost no chance of succeeding. Like 5 years ago, Apex Zach Randolph could not be a center with like Jarrell Martin as a power forward and stop anyone. Like he's not a center. He's never been a center. He's not going to be able to protect the rim whatsoever. And now we're at the end of his career. So it's like, yeah, his defensive rating is terrible, but he's playing center. I think he's never done, and he's doing it with a power forward who's more of a stretch athlete, not a rim protector. So I don't know. One of my big questions with the Grizzlies after five games is it seems like if he's going to be the sixth man, I kind of thought he would be on a second unit where, say, and it might be when Brandon Wright comes back, like Brandon Wright will play the five and Zach will play the four. But it seems that Fizdale has been reticent to play two guys who can't really shoot or stretch the floor or even get out on the perimeter defensively. Because my thinking is, as a sixth man, I thought he would be abusing backup power forwards. And the NBA isn't really filled with backup stretch fours. You know, like it's a problem, right, but it's not going to kill you. So in my mind, that's the trade-off where we would see Zach on the second unit playing more power forward. But he's been thrust into this role. He's accepted it of playing center. So, yeah, if he keeps playing center, I think there's no chance the team's defensive rating or whatever, however you want to measure it, like his on-off percent, you know, on-off numbers defensively, they're going to be bad because as soon as they get past that perimeter defense, and again, we're playing a lot of young guys, like he's out there a lot, or old guys, you know, like Vince or Andrew Harrison or Wade Baldwin, they're getting beat on the perimeter, and then that's just like Main Street to the bucket. Like no one's going to block these shots. So I do kind of feel like Zach is getting, you know, a raw deal on that number because, again, he's not a center and he's not going to block any shots. So it really is a team defense in that aspect. And I'd be curious to see, you know, if he ends up getting to play some more four, like along, you know, if Deonte Davis gets a little more run, maybe he can play an actual five. But again, Fizdale hasn't shown that he wants to play two, like back to the basket, not really 3-point, you know, versatile guys at the same time.
The development of these backup bigs is really going to be interesting to watch because Jarrell Martin has shown flashes of his ability. Deonte Davis has shown flashes of his ability. So does that make somebody more expendable via trade down the road? Does that make a Jamichael Green or a Brandon Wright that much more likely to be moved for another wing or a backup point guard, like Roser was talking about. Maybe you can get a second round pick out of that kind of deal as well. The development of these young guys as the season goes on really bears watching. And I think Zach Randolph, you're right. If he's playing alongside a longer, more athletic, rim-protecting kind of big, he'll have more success defensively. They're asking a lot of him right now. We're chatting with Keith Parrish of the Fast Break Breakfast podcast over on the Step Back Network. Make sure you're following their podcast on Twitter at Fast Break Break. Tony Allen just came back from his knee ailment. As we talked about earlier, Chandler Parsons, Brandon Wright, not in the lineup as of yet. They're 3-2 playing against mostly bad teams. Eventually, you'd hope in the next couple of weeks, Allen will be full go. Parsons will at least be back, even on a minutes restriction. Brandon Wright will hopefully be full go. How much of a difference do you think those three key rotation guys, and in the case of Parsons, one of your three star players at this point, how much of a difference are they going to make? Do you think that Fizdale's schemes are really going to start clicking with the better pieces of the puzzle in there? Or do you think there's going to be an adjustment period? Because these guys haven't played a game together yet. Parsons has been a limited participant, not even cleared for five-on-five work until the past week or so. This is going to be an adjustment, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's going to be an adjustment, but I also think it is going to get better as soon as any of the pieces come back. Like, just getting Tony Allen back, and even though Tony was in full treat mode from the trick-or-treat Tony against the Pelicans, like, just having him back in the rotation seemed to make, at least to my eye test, it made all the rotations look more correct. It didn't. There weren't lineups where you're like, oh, this lineup has no chance of succeeding. Like some of those where they were rolling out like Baldwin, Andrew Harrison, Jarrell Martin, James Ennis all at the same time. You're like, these guys, none of them are primary op. They're all like fourth or fifth.
Yeah,
it's
not going to work.
So like, and even though the Grizzlies played terribly against the Pelicans and they couldn't hit any shots, at least just adding Tony Allen to the rotation made more sense to me, where I'm like, all right, I'm starting to feel a little better. Maybe I'm starting to be a little more optimistic about this Grizzlies team because I like these lineups. These combinations seem to work. Getting Chandler Parsons is obviously the huge X factor for the whole season. I think everyone said it all off season and still now going into the regular season. He's the guy who takes them from can they squeak into the playoffs to can they win a playoff round. So once Chandler comes back, yes, you hope his playmaking, his ability to play stretch four, because again, Fizdale isn't playing two bigs at the same time, really. So like him playing stretch four, that could be a huge weapon for the Grizzlies. Brandon Wright coming back. You alluded to it earlier about the young guys, Jarrell Martin, Deontay Davis, making perhaps some guys expendable. I think you got to say Brandon Wright's expendable. He's a guy, unfortunately, I mean, friend of Fast Break Breakfast program. He came on our show. He's from Nashville, Tennessee, where we're based. But this is a man, unfortunately, I want to say he's played 9 years and he's only played 50 games like once or twice. So it's like, yeah, he might have taken a hometown discount to sign with the Grizzlies, but at this point he is totally expendable. And there's a gaping hole at backup point or another combo guard. Like the Grizzlies need it too. Troy Daniels so far is totally MIA. Tony Allen, you don't know what you're going to get as far as games played. He's going to miss some games. And then there's no also backup point. Like Wade Baldwin, outside of his big first game with that statistical anomaly, the three blocks, the three steals, the three air balls, and whatever else. Like, you know, he's not ready to hold down the fort, at least, you know, against the good teams. So I think there's a giant hole, but I don't even know if you could trade Brandon Wright. I don't know what value he holds. You know, I don't know if a team like Dallas, if they would check him out and be like, yeah, he's totally healthy, we'll take him back because we've had success with him before. But I do think he's expendable, and I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys moved, you know, or Jamichael Green, who again was kind of the hero of the Pelicans game, but he's a guy who's going to hit restricted free agency next year, and it's like maybe they want to move on, and maybe they can get a guy. Maybe they can get a shooting guard or someone can play some point and some shooting guard. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, when the guys come back, it's going to help. But, you know, it remains to be seen as far as what they do in regards to the roster.
The only flaw with Jamichael Green potentially being traded is it makes it harder because of salary cap restrictions. You almost have to pair that contract another contract like a Vince Carter. And when you're trading Vince Carter, who has obviously been a key part of their rotation so far, it almost becomes a self-deprecation. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So yeah. Brandon Wright would make sense in terms of contract, but like you said, on the flip side, how much value does he really have? He's on a great contract, but he hasn't shown the ability to be healthy or stay healthy as long as he's been in Memphis. Who would you try to move? I'm just curious. Obviously, Jamichael Green likely to get paid. The Grizzlies are a bit limited in that department moving forward. As you mentioned, his restricted free agency coming up. Brandon Wright on a good cap-friendly deal, but he hasn't been able to stay on the floor. Do you have a preference as to who you would move? It sounds like you're leaning towards Wright.
Well, at this point, again, Jamichael Green, as you mentioned, he's making the minimum. So you can't really trade him for anything. And a team getting him, you know, has no assurances. I guess they'll be able to sign him, but it isn't a big advantage. So, I mean, that seems weird. Like, Troy Daniels has no value. I don't know. I feel like you would have to sweeten a trade with him or even Brandon Wright with maybe one of those second round picks that they got from the Courtney Lee trade or, the other moves they've made. So, like, you know, if a team like Brooklyn would take a second round pick and this is more of a swing for the fences, and I don't even think this is going to happen, but it's like, if they would take a Brandon Wright and a second round pick, and then you can get Bojan Bogdanović or someone like who can play the two, but he's also a guy who's going to be a free agent. So that's a risky move. You know, so I don't really know. The Grizzlies are in a tough spot as far as improving the roster at this point. History has shown they normally make an in-season move. They've done it, I don't know how many years in a row. But looking at the roster, there's no obvious choice for me. You know, like, I don't know, because you can't imagine any of the core four moving. And then you're left with just a handful of, like, Vince Carter has been, he's like second or third on the team in minutes. And it's like, he's played really well. Like, so you'd be surprised if they move him. So, yeah, I don't have a good answer for you. I would think you would try to move Brandon Wright or Troy Daniels when you're allowed to move him, like in December or something. But I wouldn't. I'm not holding my breath that they're going to be able to.
A Tony Allen, Brandon Wright, second-round draft pick trade would bring back somebody who makes roughly $10 million a year. I'm not advocating for it. I couldn't
stomach trading Tony. I couldn't.
Right.
It's not worth it to me.
they might Blog Talk Radio and the Grizzlies powers that be might shun me from the radio airwaves or the online radio airwaves for even mentioning the thought.
Right.
But that would be one. If they were going to move a member of the core four, I think somebody, all it takes is one team to fall in love with the idea of a culture changer like Tony Allen coming and helping rebuild something.
And it's not something you want to think about as a Grizzlies fan, but it could be a thing that, like, Zebo's like, you know what? I kind of want to play at the end of basketball games. like maybe hook me up somewhere that needs a power. Like, maybe the Raptors want to have a power forward to bully around, you know, to join a really good
right.
team in the East. Or, like, you know, maybe some of these other teams that need a big guy, like, they'll let me come play and do some stuff. Because, I mean, there's been some really nervous – the Grizzlies have pulled out these three games, but there's been very tense, nervous moments, and Zebo's sitting on the sideline watching James Ennis and Jamichael Green play his minutes. And the Grizzlies' offense has not been great. They've been bailed out by some big shots and a John Wall flagrant foul. So I think that's something to monitor is how much Zebo, you know, he always talks about how much – I mean, he's obviously – he's like the team mascot along with Tony Allen. Beloved,
right.
he does so much in the community. We all love him. But if we are trying to think of wild hypotheticals where the Grizzlies can move somebody, you know, maybe they work out something where Zebo's like, maybe I want to go play here, play a little more. And we're like, all right.
That would be fascinating. It also would possibly burn Memphis to the ground. But
I know.
Yeah,
I have to get rid of all my Grizzlies jerseys. It's like I only have Zebo and Tony Allen shirts. So,
but at the same time, nothing is off limits at this point. I think the fact that Fizdale has come in and done what he's done successfully, where Dave Yeager failed in the years following Lionel Hollins, anything is on the table. I would not be surprised at this point. I don't think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be surprised either. We're finishing up here with Keith Parrish of the Fast Break or Breakfast. See, keep catching me with that.
Man, I got you twice.
Fast Break Breakfast, you did. Podcast on the Step Back. Make sure you're following them on Twitter at Fast Break Break. The last guest at the end of the show every week previews the week ahead when we're in season here, Keith. They have three games coming up. They've got the Clippers Friday night. That's the big one, the main event of the week, so to speak. Always nice when the Clippers are in town. Sunday, they have a matinee against the Portland Trail Blazers. And then Tuesday, they're at home against the Denver Nuggets. Then they have 3 days off, which is fantastic for this team. They could use the time off, of course. Clippers, Trailblazers, Nuggets, all three games in the friendly confines of FedEx Forum. How do you see these three games playing out? How do you see the Clippers, Portland, Denver? Again, the first two games especially, a real step up in competition. Do you think the Grizzlies can pull out 2-1? Do you think even a sweep is possible here? How do you see it going for Memphis these next three games? A sweep is probably being too optimistic.
Right, right. I would say there's no chance of a sweep. You know, it's gonna be really tough. The Grizzlies are a team still trying to kind of figure out what their pieces are and how they all fit together. And they've been lucky by playing some pretty bad competition. I think Friday night, you hope they get up. You get some excitement. I think Tony and Zach are going to be at a level they really weren't at the last two games. Because those are veteran guys. They've been around for a long time. And they're like, all right, we're resting guys. Maybe I'm not going to have it. Like, they're professionals, but they know. You can tell when they're not, like, totally locked in. And I think we're going to see it from them on Friday. I still think, though, that's a tall order. Like, the Clippers know who they are right now. Like, they're the same team they've been. Their bench is giving them great contributions. So that's gonna be a tough task. Yes, we have the fans of the Grindhouse on Friday night pulling for them. So I definitely would think the Clippers. I think the Clippers are going to be favored. I think the Clippers will probably win. But I think that's the one where maybe they can steal. That'll be exciting. I think Sunday at Portland is tough because I think the Sunday crowds are not as normally hyped. For some reason, we can't get that excited about the Trailblazers, I feel like, as just a fan base. But, again, that's another team. They know who they are. So, like, that's going to be a tough game as well. My hope as a fan is, you know, obviously you get one of those, you feel pretty good. So this is now where my pessimism comes into play. The Denver Nuggets are a really sneaky, good team of young guys. Like, they think they're fighting for a playoff spot. They're incredibly deep. They don't have any huge flaws. They're growing as a unit. And, like, that's a real tough matchup. And I think it's one of those things where they might even be overlooked. Like, if the Grizzlies drop both the Friday and Sunday games, maybe they'll be really dialed in and we have to get this third one. But as a Grizzlies fan, I'm terrified that, you know, the 3-2 start feels good. But these next three games, like, I wouldn't put money on the Grizzlies to win each of them individually. Hopefully they can pull off one. So I guess I'll say they'll go 1-2, but I have no idea which one of the three they're going to win.
1-2 is a fair guesstimate. I don't see them losing all three games at home. So I would say 1-2 is fair. I'm going to go 2-1 because I'm ever the optimist. I think that they'll pick off Portland, and I think that they'll beat the Clippers. I agree with you on Denver. I think that's a sneaky game. Denver is a better team this year. And technically, the Clippers and the Blazers are better than the Grizzlies right now. But especially the Clippers, that's a rivalry game. It's a Friday night in Memphis. I think the crowd is going to help power them to a big win on Friday. Sunday could be a trap game after the high of a game on a Friday night against the Clippers at home. So I could see them dropping Portland. I think they beat the Clippers on Friday night. But I also have acknowledged multiple times, both on this podcast and on the blog, that I am just a Clippers hater. I know they're good. The basketball logic part of me fully understands and acknowledges that they're a very good basketball team. But every time the Memphis Grizzlies line up with them, I just expect them to win because of the history and the rivalry. And that's not exactly entirely logical, but I do believe in that rivalry. And I think the Grizzlies get a little bit more muster to go up against those Clippers. And that core four that has been a part of all of those battles in the past is still in Memphis. A lot of change has gone on so far this season, but that core four still remains. Keith, thank you so much for joining us. It was a lot of fun. Definitely great to have you on the show for the first time, and obviously we'll have you on again in the future. And anytime you need a fast break breakfast guest, be sure to shoot me a line. I'll be happy to hop on.
You got it. Thanks for having me. It was a treat.
All right. Absolutely. Thank you, Keith. Once again, excuse me, that was Keith Parrish of the Fast Break Breakfast podcast over on the Step Back. Make sure you're following them on Twitter if you don't already do so. The great show that is the Fast Break Breakfast at Fast Break Break. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Monax. And it's been a great show. Really enjoyed having our guests on with me tonight. John Roser was tremendous. Keith Parrish was fantastic. Great insights, great guests who, again, one of the best things about Grizzlies fans is there's a very eclectic group. There's a lot of optimism. There's a lot of pessimism. Usually it's a lot of informative takes, at least from what I've seen on Twitter and blogging. Obviously, my, I guess, going on 4 months now as site manager over at GBB, interacting with folks, all the appearances I've had on other podcasts and radio shows and all that stuff that I've been very fortunate to be able to do. In the media, there's a lot of informed takes. There's not a bunch of people that just yell at the sky because. Even the people that maybe yell at the sky, they at least have a reason for the shouting. So it's really good to chat with different folks. Keith, first time on the show, I really enjoyed him as a guest in particular, and Roser's been on multiple times. But it's good to get the different takes. It's good to get the different perspectives. And I think that's part of what makes the Memphis media and fan base so unique. So many different ways of looking at the same thing. It really kind of enhances the fan experience. And hopefully we at Grizzly Bear Blues are a part of that for you as well. The next time we will be on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves for a brand spanking new episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live, our flagship podcast, will be November 10th. Next Thursday, same time, we'll be recording late once again, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central for the live recording. Obviously, you can listen to the podcast on Blog Talk Radio, on the site itself, gbbgrizzlybearblues.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can listen anytime you want on your schedule with the podcast format here for GBB Live. We'll be back on for a live recording next week. Make sure you're checking out fanessentials.net for all of your Grizzlies gear needs, having shipped right to your door. Very nice. Make sure you're checking out fanessentials.net. Thanks again to my great guests, John Roser and Keith Parrish. Thanks to you for listening. Continue to make GBB, grizzlybearblues.com, your main source for Grizzlies coverage as the season continues to go on. We're proud to be a part of the SB Nation Network. We're proud to be a part of Blog Talk Radio for this podcast. And I am proud to be the host and the site manager for this podcast and for the site, respectfully. It's been a great ride so far. Can't wait for it to continue. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This has been Grizzly Bear Blues Live.